Here in just a little while, we'll be seeing number 695, None of Self and All of Thee. I'd like to thank everyone for coming out this morning. I always love the opportunity to be able to speak. I have been coming here for 29 years, and I think it's great to be able to get up and speak. I really miss Abe not being here. I really enjoy when he's here because he gives me critical feedback on, you know, when I present, and I always enjoy that, so it's everybody else's job today. That if I say something wrong or out of place, let me know. I never want to misquote anything or mislead anything, so please talk to me after services if I've misled anybody or misquoted anything. So this morning, Roger picked our topic of study on encouragement, and mine is nothing like Roger's. And I think it's funny, especially when me and Abe will do the exact same thing. We'll have an idea in when we present, it is completely opposite. And I've always liked the saying, you know, great minds think differently, because if they all think alike, we really wouldn't be getting anywhere. So we're going to be talking about encouragement today. And I think this is a great topic. Roger was talking about encouragement from what we can see out in nature. We can look at our planet and see all these great things that are encouraging and uplifting to us. But while I was putting this together, I was thinking of encouragement. What can we think about when it comes to just encouragement? I've always loved motivation and motivational speaking, so this is just something that I really enjoy putting together this morning. So, encouragement, I try to think of what we think of when we put together things for encouragement. So, with encouragement, I was thinking we set examples. You know, we set examples to others. You know, we can set examples to help ourselves be encouraged. To go along with that, I have no one encourages you. I only have one picture on my desk at work, and it's a picture of Einstein's desk. And Einstein's desk has got thousands of books piled up on it and paper everywhere. I don't have a piece of paper anywhere on my desk. I only have a computer monitor. And he always said, you know, an intelligent person, you can tell how intelligent somebody is by how messy their desk is. And I thought that was funny because I don't have anything on my desk. You know, but that's encouraging for me because I look up at that picture and I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm not as smart as I even think I am. So, you know, that's things that encourages me. Also, when you learn about others, you can use that to help encourage them. The more you know about somebody, you can help that for encouragement. Like, I like chocolate, so if you guys want to encourage me, I know that I like chocolate. But, you know, the more you know about others is what you can help encourage them. You can figure out how you can help others, which is part of encouragement. Write notes and letters. I think the women here at the congregation do a great job of writing letters to ones that are sick and the ones who are in the hospital. Handwritten notes are something that we don't really see too much anymore. And I'm saying that because, you know, I'm a computer engineer and I've worked in computers, you know, my whole, you know, career. So I don't know the last time that I've got a handwritten letter other than being sick or something like that. You know, what a thing of encouragement. Because we're actually going to be looking at some of the letters that were written to some of the churches today as things that are uplifting for them. Words of praise. As you guys know, one of my favorite Bible verses is, words fitly spoken are like apples of gold and settings of silver. Well, if you think about that verse, you know, words fitly spoken can mean a lot to somebody. You can really uplift somebody and really give a lot of praise to somebody by knowing what to say to that person. And also being with others. I can't think of anything that makes us happier than coming together. You know, Mom was talking about, you know, I think Nana said a few times, she's like, I don't want to go to this. But when she goes, it's like, I'm really glad that I went to this. Yeah, because that's uplifting. You know, that is so great. Because sometimes, you know, we drag ourselves to services. But once we're here, we're like, oh, man, I am so glad I came. You know, that was so encouraging, so uplifting. I'm really glad that we came. So When talking about Christian encouragement, I put together just a list of some of the things that I have Bible verses for that we can look at for encouragement. So we can sing, as given examples of Ephesians and Colossians here. We see that singing is a large encouragement. Fellowship, coming together, being with one another in Acts, is a big encouragement. Praying before a meal, you know, I had this down as something that is something that's encouraging, especially when you go to a restaurant somewhere and you see somebody praying before a meal. It's like, yeah, that's great, you know. And this is something that I struggle with sometimes. Sometimes I go out with people from work and I kind of say a little prayer to myself, you know, and I went out to lunch with a couple friends that I used to work with, and one would always stop everybody from eating and say, hey, you know, Kyle's going to say a prayer before we start. And I always thank that person, you know, because I didn't stand up myself and say, hey, everybody stop, but he always did. And I always thought, wow, how encouraging was that, that I had a friend that would always do that for me. Also, condemning foul language, which is also interesting in the workplace. You know, I've had people in the workplace think it was fine to say whatever you want to, you know, customers or students or whatever, but I've always been thankful for the people that stood up and say, you know, that's not good example, you know, to have of yourself. And also visiting the sick. You know, there are so many passages I could give with these, but I kind of just gave a few passages. If anybody was interested in looking these up, we didn't have enough time to look at each one of these today, but I just kind of had some passages up to think of things that the Bible specifically says that gives encouragement. But today we're going to look at a couple people from two different backgrounds. We're going to look at some of the things that they did and how they kind of came together to help each other out in the end. So we're going to look at Barnabas. And for the ones that have studied about Barnabas, you might know that his real name was not Barnabas. According to Acts, his name was actually Jose or John or Jonathan, depending on what translation you have. So, why was he named Barnabas? Well, Barnabas is actually means son of encouragement. And I was thinking, wow, how interesting is that to have a name that a whole community has decided to change your name to Barnabas? That must be pretty encouraging. That person must be very uplifting to have a whole group of people want to change your name to that. So, we know that he's one of the first teachers at the Church of Antioch. We also know that he was a Levite and that he was a native of Cyprus where he possessed some land. And we also know that he sold that land and gave it to the apostles because he was really big on encouragement. And he sold that land, and that's stated in Acts 4, 36 and 37, where he had this land, he sold it and gave all the money to the apostles. And he must have been setting a trend because in Acts 5, it talks about Ananias and Sapphira, who also sold land and tried to give the money to the apostles, but yet they held some back for themselves. And that didn't work out very well for them, and that's in Acts 5. But it looks like others were trying to be just like him. So if we think about where he lived, Barnabas at this time, he lived in Cyprus. So Cyprus is an island that sits off the coast over here, over off the side of Syria or Israel or however you want to see that. But he actually was preaching in Antioch, is actually where he had studied, but he sold land in Cyprus. And all you guys know that I love maps and looking at the actual locations of where they would have lived. And from what I understand about this area of Cyprus, it would have looked like this. This is actually a photo of today of Cyprus. And I think of Antioch does not look like this. Antioch is pretty much well a desert. So he moved, sold his land from here, and moved to Antioch to preach. But I just think, wow, that would have took a lot for me to move to the desert to start preaching. But he did sell his property here, as we know, and then he started studying with others. So let's move on to another person of the Bible. Let's talk about Saul of Tarsus. Now, we all know that Saul, later his name changes, but right now, since the Bible uses the name Saul, I'm going to use the name Saul up until he changes the name to Paul here in later verses. So we first see Saul at the stoning of Stephen. So we know that this is not a very good act that's going on. I've actually been reading a lot of different things about stoning and stoning techniques that they used back in the day. I was actually reading that, you know, they may have even buried them in the sand up to their waist so they couldn't move, and then they would throw stones at them that way. So literally Saul at this point even said that he held the jackets of the ones stoning Stephen. So he declared that he was a persecutor of Christians. He was a blasphemer, injurer, unbeliever, and chief of sinners that he has listed here, even that he states about himself. But we know that Saul later was approached by Christ in Acts 9, 1 through 19. And I thought I would read this passage real quick. It says, "Then Saul, still breathing threats and murders against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest." So this guy is still just going against Christians and asked letters from the synagogue of Damascus so that if he found anyone who were in the way, whether men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. So he basically had almost a license to kill. He had reasons just to bring people, you know, right to jail. He had pretty much a full license. And, you know, to go back and to read about Saul, how well he was educated, and he was educated by the Sanhedrin, it's very interesting to think of he was so against Christians that this person had a reputation for themselves. He was known throughout everywhere as being this person that's, you know, breathing threats and murders against the disciples. But we know later on here in verses 3 through 9 that a light comes from heaven. Jesus speaks to him. And then in 10 through 19, Ananias is told to meet with Saul and baptize him in verse 18. So we know that there's conversion. You know, this person that was very, very against Christ has now been converted. And, you know, to me that's always been an uplifting story. Somebody that was so against Christ now has changed. But I'd like to take another couple closer looks at our study today. So when this happened with Saul, he was told to go to Jerusalem here. And when Saul had come to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him. But they did not believe he was a disciple. As you can imagine, you have this man that was so against the church, so well known, and then he shows up in your town saying, "Yeah, I'm one of you." Man, I would think that he was trying to trick me. And I would think that he was trying to trick me to find out where all the other disciples were. It would be very hard for me to be like, "Yeah, come on over. This is where we're meeting." I mean, because basically this guy has a creed that says that he can arrest anybody practicing Christianity. I still think of that. I just think, wow, if I would try to avoid him at all cost. But guess what? There was somebody who didn't. That was Barnabas. So Barnabas took him, brought him to the apostles, and declared to them how he had seen the Lord on the road, and he spoke to him, and how he had preached boldly in Damascus in the name of Jesus. So it took that one person that was very motivated, that was very... I don't know. It's hard to describe to think, well, Barnabas was just like, "You know what? I believe you." Yeah. You know, that's very encouraging to think he was just like, "Yes, you know, even if this is a risk to my life, you know, if you're saying the truth, that I believe you." So to think that, you know, Barnabas and Saul had come together like this, it's really amazing. So when, now, Paul, he's first called Paul at Cyprus, we'll see. Before Paul starts on his missionary journey, he is called to serve in Acts 13. So, who goes on Paul's first missionary journey? Well, of course, Barnabas does, right? Because he's got this great, encouraging person that goes with him. So, we talk a lot about Paul's missionary journeys. We're talking about going out and talking to people and uplifting them and encouraging them. Well, where does he go on the first place of his missionary journeys with Barnabas? Well, he goes to Cyprus, right? Because that's where he's from. That's where Barnabas is from. So you can imagine that you have Paul now that was persecuting Christians, that was so well known throughout the region, but has changed. And then you have Barnabas that's from that region, that knows these people, that's even sold land in this area, to go back to Cyprus to preach the word there. It kind of connects all of the dots together. You have these two people that are now on this journey together. And as you can see, I have... this is a shot I pulled off the internet where it shows all Paul's missionary journeys. And you think of all that Paul did, traveling and uplifting and building churches, you know, and appointing people at these places. That's a lot of ground to cover. You know, when I think of trying to encourage and uplift people, you know, we think of maybe driving to Cincinnati or Dayton or somebody and talking with maybe somebody in the hospital. You know, but Paul's journeys were a whole lot more than that, especially within that time frame. You know, we try to roughly calculate the distance of what he traveled based on what's quoted in the Bible, but we see a total after his third journey, and then, of course, he goes to Rome, and, of course, a whole lot happens in that journey, but we see a total of 10,282 miles that he traveled. You know, and this is on foot or by ship or by camel at this time. You know, this is a lot of area to travel. Of course, you know, we look at this map and we see these areas that he traveled. And even they said that he may have even traveled to Spain. I didn't have that calculated in there because that's still an assumption of whether he actually traveled there or not. But, you know, if you calculated that in to what he was traveling, that would have been a lot of travels. And also, just kind of researching this the other day on the internet, people have even calculated the cost of what they think it may have been for him to travel in that time frame and the cost, and even like down to his meals. People have got a mathematical Excel spreadsheet, and you can tell that I'm in computers because I love to save the file. You know, just to think of that he would have had support when he was traveling at that time. He would have had encouragement and support to go to these places. You know, so these stories that we talk about with Paul and Barnabas, they're pretty deep. There's a lot behind these stories. Instead of just reading, hey, you know, they traveled to these places, there's a lot that had to happen in order to travel to each place. So, when we think about Paul's lifetime, we know that he was imprisoned and that he was basically under house arrest. And then he basically writes these letters. Remember I was talking about encouragement and writing letters to others? Well, we know that he wrote these letters to these other churches. And I think of just his encouragement. So he's writing to the Thessalonians here, and he's talking about Timothy and about how Timothy brought good news about faith and love. And just think of how uplifting and how encouraging that would have been to somebody that would have been in house arrest. Somebody that wasn't able to go out and travel anymore. Also to the church of Colossians, where he talks about Titus, a beloved brother, faithful minister, and fellow servant of the Lord, will tell you good news. You know, think of how uplifting that would have been. I mean, I don't know how fast news would have traveled at that time, but just to think that you were basically imprisoned. So you couldn't go out and travel anymore, go to the churches that you helped set up or anything. You basically were locked away. But just being able to receive and send letters. And to think of how encouraged he was probably to receive these letters back from these other churches that were being set up at that time. Of course, we know that a lot happened with Paul. And he was stoned twice. You know, there was a lot that happened to him. And to think that these words from these other churches is what encouraged him to keep going. So, those are the two stories that I was kind of following along to build up encouragement. So, I want to take a look at some of the other verses that we have today that we can talk about encouragement of ourselves. So, here in 2 Timothy 2:15, it says, "Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed of rightly dividing the word of truth." So, we know that we should study the Bible and stand up for it. And also it says, "And the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but must be kind and every able to teach, not resentful." So, I think of that a lot. I think about getting in maybe a biblical argument with somebody or talking about something, and you're trying to prove your point. Well, you know, this verse always brings it back to me thinking, you know, be patient, be kind, be diligent. You know, when you think about rightly dividing the word of truth, you know, that if you're reading from the Bible and you're doing the truth, then, you know, basically that's working for you, the truth. It says, "Opponents must be gently instructed in the hope that will grant them repentance, leading them into the knowledge of truth." Also, to go along with encouragement, we have Hebrews. In Hebrews 10:25, it says, "Not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together, as in the manner of some, but exhorting one another, so much more as you see the day approaching." So we look here at Hebrews, and it even talks about assembling together. Didn't we kind of talk about earlier the things that uplift us is coming together? And then also in Peter, 1 Peter 5 and 7 says, casting all your cares upon Him, for He cares for you. So, you know, when I think of motivation, if you're down or you're trying to be uplifted, you know, being able to push all your worries away on God, to cast all your cares upon Him, that's so uplifting to me, because you can be like, oh, you know, I'm worried about this, and this. And it's like pray about it and cast all your worries upon Him. Also, Romans 14, 16 through 19, it says, therefore, do not let your good be spoken of as evil, for the kingdom of God is not eating and drinking, but righteousness and peace and joy in the Spirit. For he who serves Christ in these things is acceptable to God and approved by men. Therefore, let us pursue the things which makes for peace and things by which one may edify another. Right? Because we're here to edify one another, to uplift, enjoy one another's presence and company. You know, I was thinking the other day, I'm not a great song leader or singer or anything, but I sure do like hearing everybody else. And I'm glad that I can preach, because I feel like I'm a little bit better at this than I am at song leading. So that's why I really enjoy this so much. And really, that's what help edifies me, is to be able to study, to put these things together, to present them. As most of you guys know, that I'm in education. And one of the things that I've noticed the most is I have learned so much by sitting and studying and putting together my lessons before I teach them at school. So that's helped encourage me and edify me. I'm pretty sure Roger's the same way. Sometimes we learn more from putting this together than maybe what you guys take away. So comfort and edification. In 1 Thessalonians 5:11, it says, therefore comfort each other and edify one another, just as you also are doing. So this is also part of a letter to Thessalonica. And I don't know how many of you have read through the Matthew Henry commentary about this verse. It's very interesting. This is a real short verse, but yet it says so much. So I thought I would read real quick, and actually I paraphrased, because it was almost like three paragraphs long, of what the commentary actually said about this verse. And I thought this was really great to kind of take a look at. It says, note, we should not only be careful about our own comfort and welfare, but to promote the comfort and welfare of others. Now, isn't that true for Christians, that we're here to promote and to care for others? They must edify one another by following after those things whereby one may edify another. And that comes from Romans 14:19. As Christians are lively stones build up together a spiritual house, they should endeavor to promote the good of the whole church by promoting the work of grace in one another. You know, I think of Christians being living stones. Roger constantly talks about how we come to recharge our batteries. You know, like as your battery drains down, you come back to services, you get lifted back up, and then you go throughout your week and you come back and you recharge your batteries. I was thinking that as we are living stones. And it is the duty of every one of us to study that which is the edification of those with whom we converse, to please all men for their real profit. We should communicate our knowledge and experience one to another. And I kind of underlined that. Our knowledge and our experience can uplift others. We should join in prayer and praise with one another. We should set good examples one before another. And it is the duty of those, especially who live in the same vicinity and family, thus to comfort and edify one another. And this is the best neighborhood, the best means to answer the end of society. You know, like I said, this is actually just taking a couple sentences out of something that commentary wrote almost an entire book out of this one passage. But I thought, wow, how inspiring is that? You know, We're called together, especially those that live in the same vicinity and family, to comfort and edify one another. You know, I can't think of something that's more comforting and edifying as being with others and uplifting. I just thought that this was really important for us to kind of take a look at this morning. So getting back with what we were talking about, our examples of encouragement, in, you know, setting examples, knowing what encourages you, words of praise, being with others, I kind of just wanted to tell a story about a trip that me and Jenna went on not too long ago. You know, sometimes you just sit back and think, wow, you know, I'm 29. I've been able to do a lot in my lifetime. And one of the things that we got to do not too long ago was go to an itty-bitty little island right off the top of South America called Bonaire. It's a very, very small island, very, very, very remote. I think there's only like 2,600 people that live on the entire island. That's about the population of Waynesville. It's a very small island. The landing strip was about the size of the island. And when we were there, as you know, I was looking for a church to be able to attend services with. And it's very interesting, encouraging, and uplifting that I found one. It's quite amazing when to go to other countries and being able to attend services, just like we're doing this morning. And to have a church that was located basically in the middle of nowhere that was preaching and doing the exact same things that we are. It was probably one of the most encouraging things I have ever done in my entire life, especially because 90% of the people that attended services was from the age of 6 to 12. I would say. There was people a little older than that, but in this culture, it was not common for anybody older than 20 to attend services. That was just how Bonaire's culture was. So, as you can imagine, being in a room a little smaller than this, having nothing but kids sing, was amazing. It was amazing. I actually recorded a lot of it, so if anybody's interested in hearing it, I recorded a lot of it. And the language that they sung in was what's called Papamento. Luckily, the preacher was from Tennessee. So we sung songs in English and in Papamento. Papamento is an interesting language because it's based on a vernacular that's, that you can just pronounce. It's basically a phonics language because it's not actually a recorded language. So he wrote all the songs out so we could just sing along with him in the language. As you guys know, I'm dyslexic. It was very interesting for me to sing along with everybody. But it was a very interesting, encouraging, and uplifting thing to be able to go out here, meet a preacher from Tennessee that knew some of the families that I knew, just really interesting. And we got to spend the entire day with him. We enjoyed him so much. He came and picked us up at the hotel and drove us around in this itty-bitty little bus. And that's how he gets kids to church, because some of them are way too young to drive to church or anything like that. He's got this itty-bitty little van. This is the only picture I have of him, and he's sitting right here. His name was Martin, and he, growing up, was not religious whatsoever. Very, very, very strong atheist. Very against the church. He had nothing to do with it. He met his wife. Took one look at his life and was like, I am completely wrong. I need to do this. And then all of a sudden started preaching in other countries. He knew like 8 languages. And he was a very, very, very impressive person. But I have a lot of the paperwork and everything that we talked about, and sometimes I still thumb through all the stuff because really, me and him got to spend almost 2 days just in this van driving around this island talking about uplifting and encouraging things. It's interesting to see the things in Bonaire that they struggle with as a church are the exact same things that we struggle with here as a church. You know, when it gets down to those small things, the things that we have recorded in the Bible of, you know, I was thinking of Revelations, where the 7 churches of Asia, where it talks about the issues and the problems they have, you know, and how to fix them. It really is truly amazing to be able to go somewhere and to be so uplifted and encouragement. You know, when those kids started singing, I was just like, hey, take all my money, give whatever. If you guys need songbooks, you know, let me know. It was so encouraging. It was one of the neatest things I think I've ever got to do. And I'm really sad that I didn't get any other picture of him. He's wearing a tie-dye shirt and jeans. But he was a very uplifting and motivating person. We still send him emails and talk to the family. It's really neat. And they also have family in Ohio. And I keep telling him when he comes in, you know, he ought to come to services here. So that's so encouraging for us. And kind of wrapping up the lesson this morning, here at the end of services, we always have a song of encouragement. You know, and when you look at the definition for encouragement, I didn't want to add that this morning. We normally define the word or whatever we're speaking on. But today I kind of wanted the lesson to define encouragement itself. And I was thinking that encouragement is to call forward. I didn't realize that until I was really looking at the definition. And you know, we all always use this time in our service as a song of encouragement. Well, it also means a song to be called forward. And at this time, if anybody would like prayers for the church or like to be baptized, you can come forward as we stand and sing.